Evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Phyllis Pricer, hostess of the Higher Dimension. Tonight, we have a wonderful guest, Will Horton. Dr. Horton is a hypnotherapist and an NLP trainer. That's neuro-linguistic programming. He is a wonderful lecturer. He has hypnotherapy centers in Florida. Isn't that right, Will?
Right, three of them.
Three of them. And so, well, you can tell about where they are then. He's also an author and has published books, and he has a new book out. And what the new book about is what he's going to talk on tonight for the most part. I want to welcome you to our show, Will, and so glad that you could make it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, now, neurolinguistic programming, rather. I'm going to try it in English again. Neurolinguistic programming is a wonderful, wonderful study. And I've taken your course myself and learned a great deal about it. And it's somewhat allied with marketing, is it not? Public relations, presentation of yourself.
Well, it could be. It's kind of a. It's hard to describe because it encompasses a lot of things.
Okay, just let's toss them out.
I like to say it's the subjective study of how people think. Or my short way to describe it to people, the easiest is, it teaches you how to get people to do what you want and have them think it was their idea.
I love it. I think all parents should take this program.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you have written a new book, and it's on the manipulation of the mind, is it not?
Yeah. I'm a simple guy, so I call it mind control.
Okay.
And then I subtitle it, How to Get People to Do What You Want.
Okay. Part of what we're going to talk about tonight, I want you to feel free, if you feel like, you know, as you did in your lecture, you want to tell stories, tell jokes, it's okay. We can do that.
Okay.
This is real informal chat radio, and we are live broadcast here. So anytime any of our listeners have a question that they'd like to ask, please feel free to call in and talk to Dr. Horton or to myself. And we're just going to start now, ease it in, and I'm going to let him take over the microphone and do his thing. And we'll just ask questions. When I don't understand it, I'll ask questions. If the audience needs clarification, call in. Go ahead, Will.
Well, it's basically how people think and how you can gather that information and sway them in the way you want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting art because it's based on how people think, not why.
Mm-hmm.
Because psychology, and I'm a licensed psychologist, by the way.
Oh, and, boy.
I've been licensed for several years.
Excellent.
Psychology sometimes has a tendency to get stuck in the why. Why, mm-hmm. why this or why that?
Mm-hmm.
And many times, and this sounds strange, but the fact that, you know, it kind of goes back to cause and effect. People are looking for a cause and effect.
Right.
But many times in human behavior, mm-hmm. at least to me, it seems like there is no cause and effect. Sometimes there just is.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens sometimes is what like the behavior or the thinking or the things you're looking at
mm-hmm.
has been so ingrained in the person, there may be a cause somewhere back there,
mm-hmm.
but it can take years to find it.
Right.
And that may not change it, even when you figure out what it is. Because,
okay.
you know, a lot of the psychotherapy is based on giving people insight,
mm-hmm.
but insight does not equal change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I use the analogy of, hey, look at Woody Allen. He's been in psychotherapy for 40 years, and he marries his daughter. You know, if I'd have been his therapist, I'd have fired him. But, you know, and he could tell you why the way he is, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, insight doesn't necessarily equal change.
No.
So I look at what, you know, makes people change, how they think, what's going on in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And once you begin to look at that, you can sway them. You can get them to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the easiest ways to look at a lot of this stuff is in the broader picture. Where do you see it in the real world?
Right.
Right, like in the media. I always say, you know, people ask me, oh, I want to learn how to, like, mess with people or how to, you know, influence people. Would you say take, like, psychology or social work or psychiatry? Mm-hmm. My first reaction would be, no, go to New York and study with the people that write ads.
There you go.
They sway more people than all the psychiatrists in the world combined.
That's true.
You know?
That's very true.
Yeah, yeah. Gas is $2.50 a gallon. We're still buying Cadillac Escalades. So
doesn't make sense, does it?
No, but it's the way we're taught, you know? And so they learn how to sway people because they're not going on, you know, intellect and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the base level, human beings are oh, how can I word it without being, well, I'll just be politically incorrect. I really don't care.
Go ahead.
We're highly charged emotional animals.
That's true. That's very
true. So if you can tag into an emotion, then you can get some good play with people, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times people try to sell to the intellect. And if you sell to the emotions, it's much more powerful.
Right.
Because if you sell to the emotions, then people will use their intellect to rationalize whatever it is they just did.
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah. And some of the best examples I've seen lately, politics. Right?
Oh, a big place.
In the mid-90s, we had, the Democrats had a guy that was brilliant at it, Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
And he did a lot of the things we talk about anchoring and eliciting states and people. He made you feel good.
Right.
You know, whether you liked him or not, even some of the people that disliked him and his politics said, you know, if you're around him, he makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to his speeches, you know, he made you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was fabulous, right?
Right.
And now we have some things going on that's kind of fascinating and the way they do it. And it's like, okay, here you go. Here, you want a big overview if you got people on?
Absolutely.
Lunch, you can start a bunch of crap.
Go ahead.
Do you know why John Kerry basically lost the election in 2004?
He didn't, people couldn't seem to get emotionally,
and the biggest reason,
head up.
It started at the convention.
Okay.
And I've been thinking about this for a while and it dawned on me the other day, and I was talking to some other people. He started the convention. He came out, you know, he did the salute and he says, you know, Lieutenant Kerry reporting for duty.
Mm-hmm.
He was a warrior.
Right.
And he had credentials to prove it.
Right.
So he came out as a warrior.
Right.
Great. Within a week, he was acting like a statesman. There's a big difference. And we would have elected a warrior.
Ah.
Right?
Yes.
And all he would have had to have done, because if you can imagine in our heads, in the subconscious mind, our idea of a warrior is John Wayne.
Exactly.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, can you imagine, like in a movie scenario, which is movies train us, by the way, if the opponent would have challenged John Wayne's honor, would John Wayne have just said, well, you know, this happens and that happens and that, or would he have called him on it?
He would have called him on
it. And said, you will never do this. And
right.
It's like, in retrospect, if John Kerry, first thing, right after they ran that Swift Vote Veterans for Truth ad, he should have challenged every one of them face to face.
Right.
To put up or shut up.
Right.
And then he should have challenged the president and the vice president to quit doing this stuff, put up or shut up, and basically say, because if this is what it takes to win the election, I don't want to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and come across as a, because in our heads, a warrior does not back down.
No. No, he stands firm.
And one of the things about Bush, whether you like him or not, is in a lot of this, he was pretty steady, and he didn't seem to
he wasn't willing to back down.
Yeah, or negotiate.
Right.
And so Kerry, you know, because in retrospect, like in part of the world, they go, wow, you had a guy that won the Silver Star and the Bronze Star and Purple Hearts and all that, and he lost the election. How? Well, I think
he was willing
to
compromise.
Yes, yes. And then he didn't back up with, in the election, too, they were talking to him about being a flip-flopper.
Yes.
And he tried to justify. Again, he tried to be a statesman rather than say, "Well, I don't know." As a leader,
right?
That's the way he should have said it. I will change my mind if I'm given new facts.
Mm-hmm.
rather than say, well, I learned that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a
mm-hmm.
subtle difference. But he, in my mind, he should have related it to, well, I don't want to be like your dad when you were growing up, you know, and he said, don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And then, and kind of call his opponent on that.
Yeah.
So I learned new facts. I will change my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
A good, and see, then that would have started, I think, a change, because when you're at work, and you can think of any job you have or any of the listeners,
mm-hmm.
your good boss will listen to feedback.
Right.
Right.
And we'll adjust and make changes as necessary.
Rather, and we've all had the bosses who says, I don't care what, don't confuse me with the facts. I've made
right.
up my mind.
Right, exactly.
And so it would have been interesting. So to me, I mean, when you look at like NLP, one of the things, or mind control techniques, one of the things that it does is it kind of shows you how people think at the subconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can begin to access that, then
right.
you can sway them.
Yeah.
Can you get people to do things they don't want to do? No, I don't think so.
I agree.
Not for very long. Maybe for a short period of time. And in the sales world, that's called buyer's remorse.
Mm-hmm.
You can get them to buy.
And then they return it.
But yeah, they'll return it or not like it or talk bad about you.
And then you're in a worse pickle.
Right. But, you know, if you can align what they want with what you want, then that's a true good situation. So what NLP does is teach people, you know, how people process information at a subconscious level so it doesn't have to make any sense.
Okay.
You know, because again, going back to the 2004 election, one of the things, the other things the Republicans did brilliantly was they brought up the issue of gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept hammering on gay marriage.
And abortion.
Yeah, but mainly gay marriage. Gay
right.
marriage was a biggie.
Right.
Right, in Ohio and, mm-hmm. and some of the battleground
Indiana,
states.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay. They got a certain percentage of the population to come out and vote. They made that a very, very important issue. And again, nobody challenged it. Again, one of the senators, and I won't name his name, but he said on the Senate floor,
mm-hmm.
the day we lost 10 troops in combat,
mm-hmm.
that the biggest issue facing America right now is gay marriage. Somebody, one of the Democrats, should have stand up and said, how dare you? We have 12 coffins flying back to this country. We have bigger, well,
mm-hmm.
maybe not bigger issues, but there's other issues on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only reason, and then I'll get off the subject.
No, that's
have
okay.
you heard the president, the vice president, or any senators talk about that since the election?
No. Basically.
No. They got the people to vote. It was a highly charged, if you're.
Emotional issue.
If you're, yeah, if you're like a fundamentalist Christian,
mm-hmm.
A conservative Christian, that's a hot button issue. You will vote on it, and all of a sudden now it's gone. I don't hear, I don't see the amendment they talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything
mm-hmm.
because they got what they wanted
mm-hmm.
and now move on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a brilliant tactical move.
Mm-hmm.
And so because it accessed a person's emotions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and linked the bad stuff to your opponent and the good stuff to you. You know,
mm-hmm.
Because the other thing I thought would have been interesting of the few congressmen that did put in and nobody called them on it. That's what I find fascinating. That's
yeah.
why there's the other thing is about this whole myth of the liberal media.
There's no real liberal media.
No, because the two of the three congressmen
mm-hmm.
that put in. Oh, is that my phone? I'm sorry. Should go off in a second. But two of the three congressmen that did put in. Some kind of Defense of Marriage Act
mm-hmm.
thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have been married three times or more.
Oh, that's lovely.
So why didn't they say, well, if marriage is sacred,
yeah.
one time should be it.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, I'm speaking to divorced guys, so I have my own things. But but nobody called them on it.
Exactly.
None of the other congressmen, none of the press said, well, wait a minute. You know, how can you say marriage is sacred when you've been married three times? You know,
that's a very good point.
And but they're eliciting a strong state. And again, if you do that, you can get people to take some action.
Exactly.
And there's some other, you know, that's one way NLP
mm-hmm.
can do things. Another way is like, you know, it on a simpler level too. It's like how you think. You know, do you think at the base level
mm-hmm.
you make pictures, sounds, feelings in your head?
Right.
Right. And you may may have smells and tastes, but that's most people make picture sounds or feelings.
Okay.
So it's called visual, auditory, or kinesthetic, or feelings.
Right.
So when you're in all of these states, you know, visual, auditory, kinesthetic
mm-hmm.
can get you to access deep subconscious states.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or an emotion, if you will.
Well, I know, like, for example, the sense of smell is one of the most mm-hmm. powerful and I understand primitive mm-hmm. accesses to memory because it goes from the olfactory nerve straight into the brain.
Yeah, it passes the higher senses.
Right, exactly. Like gingerbread cookies at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Or the smell of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Or rain, or the smell of flowers, or mm-hmm. the scent of someone you knew and cared about, or a warm puppy, whatever.
Yeah.
Or even
sweaty gym socks?
Huh?
Sweaty gym socks?
Oh, well, I suppose. I didn't put my nose too close to too many of those.
Well, yeah, like an example of that, I moved to Florida.
Right.
When I first moved to Florida a few years ago. My mom had passed away, I think, 8 or 9 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was in Florida, and I had a little practice going. You know, everything's going fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then some days I'd go to lunch, you know, go out to, you know, leave
mm-hmm.
my office and actually go out and eat. And I would come back to my office, and I would be like, blah, like melancholy, I guess would be
right.
the word. Not real depressed, but like, blah,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm like, well, this is strange. So, you know, I'm doing a track, like, am I eating the wrong foods? Am
right.
I, you know, so you do the things normal people would do.
Right.
Am I eating wrong? Am I drinking too much coffee? Nothing really changed. It wasn't like I was going out and having, you know, a triple
mm-hmm.
chocolate shake or anything. And then it dawned on me because what happened one day, I walked into a little diner where I was eating a lot and it was overwhelming. So it was I consciously smelled it.
Mm-hmm.
Old lady perfume.
Oh.
You know, that lilac old lady perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's Florida, so there's a lot of that. But it was overwhelming this day, and it made me think of my mother, because, you know, God love my mother. She died of lung cancer.
Oh.
So the last few years of her life, anyway, she had no olfactory glands herself. She had no smell from smoking,
mm-hmm.
you know, for her whole life.
Right.
50 years. So she wore way too much of
perfume.
That old lady perfume.
Right.
So I would come back, and I would be like a little bit bummed out. I'd think about my mom, and, you know, it would put me in a melancholy state.
And that's what triggered it, the scent of perfume that was subconscious level.
Yeah, yeah. And so now there's some ways you could change that. What I did is I went in and did a few little mental exercises and thought, well, if my mom was alive, what would she think of this? You know, living in Florida, new
mm-hmm.
office, big house. You know, I think she'd be pleasantly surprised.
Right.
You know, and because I didn't start off. Yeah, you know, I was like, in my yearbook, I was like voted most likely to end up in detox. And it came true. and so I had to go in and like not rewrite the memory, but change how I was remembering things.
Exactly.
So instead of being melancholy about losing my mom, well, she was out of pain. She was
right.
in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have been happy for me.
Sure.
And then it didn't bother me as much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Another way to think about it is think about like, you know, people can think about like a song that was popular when they were in high school.
Right.
Right. Or like their senior prom. If they
right.
went to their prom.
Or your first boyfriend or your.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you went to your senior prom and you're thinking, like in my case, Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
Right. Now, if you had a great time, you partied, you had a great time, you know,
mm-hmm.
it makes you feel good, right?
Yes.
If your date got drunk, threw up, and left with somebody else, you probably wouldn't have a good memory.
We would revise the memory.
Right. So, well, that's the whole thing, like marketing, to link it back to marketing.
Right.
One of the things marketing does is you notice, like, they're always using oldie songs to sell cars.
Right.
And the oldie songs keep changing.
Right.
And it's music that they pick,
right.
whoever their target demographic is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what songs were popular when they were like 16 to 20 or so,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they play those songs and link it with a car.
Right.
Right.
I've noticed that.
And like, you know, for a while, a few years ago, they were playing all these Motown hits, right? And I was talking about this to a group and they said, oh, they're trying to sell to, you know, the black community.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, yes, but also too, you got to remember 80% of the Motown records were bought by white people.
You're right.
You know, and so
right.
it's a double win, right?
Uh-huh.
And because what dawned on me the other day, I actually saw it, and I think it's still running. They're actually using a Led Zeppelin commercial to sell a Cadillac. Because now the target demographic are guys around 50 to 55.
So that would be the 70s, right?
Yeah, the early 70s, hard rock. It's like, I haven't given up on my hard rock roots, even though I'm a sold out, you know, mid-level banker or whatever.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, so you're still going to be play, you know, and of course the other one comes to mind is like the song Like a Rock.
Oh, yes.
To sell the trucks.
Yes.
Right? And they're always showing you construction sites and all this manly stuff. Well, as we all know, even like where you're at in Washington or where any of the listeners are, how many of the pickup trucks are drove by people that never get the beds dirty?
A lot.
Right?
A lot.
Down here, at least half. You know, it's like you have a friend that has a truck. You know you can't ask him to move anything because he never uses his truck. You know.
And I'm still trying to figure out why in Washington, D.C., somebody needs a flatbed truck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, per square mile.
Yes.
I mean, the other one is just like, you know, the idea of, well, one of the reasons SUVs got so popular is our lives are so easy and everything, but we want the illusion of being manly or not manly, athletic, you know, camper, you know? But now, it started that way. I still remember when, like, you know, Ford Broncos, or I drive a Jeep. I drive a Jeep Wrangler.
Right.
You know, it's a car that you drive in the woods, right? It's a four-wheel drive. You beat it up, right?
How many times have you driven in the woods with it?
Twice on mine, this one. but still, I used to do that. I still camp with it.
Mm-hmm.
I use it for, but what is not athletic, but what's rugged about a Cadillac Escalade? I don't think you would take that thing out four-wheeling.
No.
Right?
No.
And just like, I don't know if it's true or not, maybe one of your listeners will point out, but someone said, per square mile, New York City has more Range Rovers than any other part of the world.
What?
I would believe it.
Well, they're expensive.
Well, yeah, and they're, you know, it gives some guy living on Long Island the illusion that he's rough, but, you know, let's face it, if you really need four-wheel drive, where are you going? Nobody else is. All the people that work for a living can't afford them. So, you know, Walmart will be closed. So,
well, those highways are tough in New York, I'm told.
Yeah, but yeah, so it's like it's, you know, but they're selling us on an emotion.
Exactly.
You know, yes, I'm rugged, or I'm a this, I'm a that.
Or an illusion of yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not the truth, you know. They might be a, you know, 55-year-old pudgy middle-aged person that, you know, they had to sleep on the ground, they die.
Yes.
You know, and so it's an interesting phenomenon when you get into how people think and what's going on in their heads and how at the simplest level, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it's people are very simple.
That's true.
They're not complicated.
That's very true.
You know, there's only a few base emotions and how they stack up and what you do with them is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
But we act, now our consciousness is confusing as all.
Right.
And that's where the big problem with people, and going back like an election or something, if you have one group talking to the intellect and the other group talking to an emotion, the emotion will always win.
Exactly. What would be good would be to tie the emotion and the intellect together.
But most people can't do that. And you know, they'll make a snap judgment based on the, you know, on the emotional impact of the situation. Again, going back to the 2004 election, I saw some of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. Man asking the vice president about, you know, education and how we're going to fix education. First comment. Well, 9/11 changed everything. What's that got to do with education?
It doesn't.
No, but it brings up a strong emotional thing.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And let you know, like, you know, you're vulnerable. You need to be. Basically, I thought it was a very paternal, you need to be protected act.
Exactly.
He won.
Yeah, he did.
You know, so, there's some interesting stuff when it comes to mind control. And, and that's just a word, but how people think, what's going on, and how you can sway it.
So what are some practical tips that you can give people in everyday situations that they might be able to use things to help them in their everyday life?
Well, one of the things, and you know, it's some of them very simple. It's like, you know, it's very smart. If you're going to work out, right, you want to work out and you want to get a better workout, take the time to make a CD or download on, if you have an iPod or whatever, music that was popular when you were at your best.
Okay.
Right? Whether it's like 70s disco music or 60s hard rock, whatever, when you were felt like you were at your most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
As probably a like mid-teenager, late teenager, early 20s.
Okay.
You know, that invincible.
Yes.
I'm, you know, going to conquer the world kind of thing.
Yes.
And play that music when you're working out. I guarantee you, you'll get a better workout.
Well, that's fascinating.
Because it's firing off different neurons in your head.
Sure.
And there was actually a study done that at a facility where they played music that was popular when the, and it's an elderly facility.
Yeah, I read that article.
That
was
they played music that was popular when these people were young and they acted better.
Yes.
You know, and they quit listening to the news. They may, you know, they turned the news off. So they weren't sitting there constantly, you know, thinking about the news. And, but when the music played, I remember when they first did it, it was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you had the World War II generation, like my dad. You know, so there's people that could barely walk. They seem to be out there trying to get it. They're out there doing swing dancing. You know.
Fabulous.
And that, because they felt better.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And again, you're firing off neurons. Your brain doesn't know the difference between a real or a vividly imagined event. And so, wow, you feel better. You know, and that's, you know, why not use like what marketing does to us to our own advantage?
Exactly.
You know, and so it'll bring up some of those positive, motivated feelings, which is good, like say you want to work out.
Right.
You know. So that would be one example. Another example would be, you know, to look for some of your own, I call them anchors, some people call them triggers, that might get you to do behavior you don't want to do.
Okay.
You know? Like if someone eats too much sweets, okay, is the trigger seeing the food, okay? Is the trigger hearing about it or smelling it?
Right.
It's usually not tasting it. By the time you taste it, you're already there.
Right.
You're in the loop at that point.
Right.
You know. So is it see, hear,
or smell?
Smell. It might be feel, like you can, you know, but it, and then. And that'll tell, and that one is one of the only times once you become aware of some of these kind of triggers, especially if they take you down a direction you're not aware of or you don't like.
Right.
That's one of the few times awareness can help you.
Okay.
Because it'll go, wow, that's why I do that.
Okay.
It's kind of like, you know, and it puts things in perspective. An example would be, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay.
They tell people you have to remember your last drink. Big thing in AA. They'll say it all over the world.
Okay.
You keep your green.
Okay.
You know? Remember your last drink. If you can't remember your last drink, you haven't had it yet. Things like that, they tell you.
Okay.
Now, what they're trying to do, and for most alcoholics, by the time you end up in AA, the last time you drank wasn't a pleasant experience.
Okay.
So then if you're thinking about a drink, so you see a cold beer on a hot day, right, or somebody offers you a martini after work, or whatever it would be, if you take a moment, and then, okay, so that looks alluring, so it starts firing off some of those, ooh, that'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a moment and consciously think, well, the last time I drank, I got arrested, I had a fight with my wife, or my boss yelled at me, or whatever happened.
The negative stuff.
All the negative, it may or may not, I don't know, but it's much more likely that it'll give you that pause that you don't go into the behavior.
Right.
To link it back to food, if, like, you see, you know, see Hershey's, you have to eat it.
Right.
If you see the Hershey's and you're aware of it, and then you think, yeah, well, you know, I've gained 5 inches around my waist.
Right. I don't need it.
I even tell people, if nothing else, reach down and grab your fat.
Okay.
I'm not kidding. I mean, I tell into my clients, okay, see that Hershey, now as you're thinking about eating it, grab your love handles, because that's where it's going, dude. And they go, oh, you're right. And then it's like, do I really want it? Do I want it that bad?
Exactly.
If they really want it that bad, well, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, just like the drink, you know, if you think if somebody has a drink problem, and they, oh, here, have a cold beer, and they look at it, and they go, yeah, but if I have a drink, my wife won't talk to me, I may get fired, and, you know, they're in trouble with that, that could be it. I don't want it that bad.
Okay. You call it trigger. Would that be called interruptive behavior?
It could, yeah. Interruptive behavior, we call it either a trigger or an anchor for what I do.
Okay.
And because it like, it, I don't know why we call it anchors. We just do.
Well, yeah.
And it's kind of like stimulus response.
Okay.
You know, Pavlov had it right 100 mm-hmm. years ago. You know, we're all a bunch of trained dogs. It's just how
yeah,
we are, train.
Aren't we?
Huh?
We are well trained,
yeah.
aren't we?
Yeah, and it's how we want to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
And why not become your own trainer rather
exactly.
than let everybody else train you?
And we're talking about self-empowerment here, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just like one way, there was a guy, one of the founders of AA, and I don't know if it's true or not, and if it is, it's a brilliant story, and if it's not, it's a brilliant made-up story. but he talked about how he was talking to a group of I don't want to call them feminists, but I'll call them feminists
okay.
out in California.
Go ahead.
And it was for women's empowerment.
Yes.
And so the first thing he did is he got up there, and I won't do it now, but he used every derogatory term you can use for a woman.
Okay.
And, of course, everybody's yelling, screaming, throwing things at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he made a comment after they calmed down. He used some more negative terms, and they got mad again. But then finally they like, what are you doing? He goes, well, if I can get you to react this way with just a word, I'm controlling you.
That's true.
And then they all, he goes, it's just a word.
Exactly.
And it's like the old sticks and stones may break my bones.
Mm-hmm.
But word, and it's true. It's like if you let these words fire you up, and then if the person using them can get you to take all this weird response,
mm-hmm.
they own you. They literally own you. They've got you tap dancing.
So this is where
that's true empowerment. If the
I
you know,
was just going
like,
to say
if, you
in
know,
politics,
like
my
that,
God.
Yeah, pardon.
I was saying in my politics, my God.
Oh yeah,
we're
it's
like,
just like
being led around with a ring in our nose.
Oh yeah, it's just like in our you know you sat through my one class and I talk about like the swastika and
right.
and the horrible things of that. And it's like, but as long as they keep giving it power. It's there.
Exactly.
If they like, I don't care. You want to show up with a swastika on your arm? You want to hang a Nazi flag? All the power to you. It will go away.
Exactly.
You know, because it's kind of like the same difference between, you know, I'm a white male with blonde hair and blue eyes.
Right.
If I was talking to Eddie Murphy and another black gentleman walked up and he says, hey, nigga, what's happening? They'll laugh and they'll talk. I'll
do
it.
If you were fat, you'd be decked.
Yeah. And it's because... In that situation, it's taken some of the power out.
Right.
And in fact, I can't think of who it. One of the civil rights leaders talks about that. That like just quit reacting to the words
right.
and they go away.
Well,
because if I can't piss you off with that word, I won't use it after a while.
And precisely, it takes away the energy.
Yeah, but we keep giving it energy.
Well, you give it life. It keeps it going.
Yeah, yeah. You know. But then sometimes it gets overused. And then that alone, if you let it run its course, it begins to lose its power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I going back to politics, I'm hearing it now. Every time they, you know, oh, terrorists are going to kill us all.
Well, see, you know.
Well, now it's getting like, oh, yeah, right, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know. Washington is like an armed camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a beautiful city, and now they have these ugly, ugly, ugly concrete planters. Which are disguised barriers,
mm-hmm.
you know. I usually say they're barriers disguised as planters. They're in front of every building. It's ridiculous,
well,
you know. And my feeling is if somebody wants to do something, you're going to do something. It doesn't mean you're stupid in security.
Yeah,
you know.
Like,
but still in all. Never mind.
Well, yeah, it's just like, you know, when you go through the airport,
yeah.
And you go through security to fly. Next time you're going through it, if any listeners are doing this, and you're going through that airport, wonder, is the security procedures to make the plane safer or to make you feel safer?
It's really to make you feel safer.
I think so. Because
really?
One of the best security experts said if you really wanted to, like, mess with the terrorists, right,
yeah.
is we should go back with, like, kind of casual screening on airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say in Washington, take down the barriers.
Right.
And say, we're not changing anything.
Well, that's true.
You know, we're America. If you blow something up, we'll rebuild the damn thing.
Exactly.
And then we'll blow up a small third world country in retribution. But
I shouldn't laugh. That's sad. I'm sorry, but I understand.
But
what
no,
you're
really.
Saying.
And rather than, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, send us off on this terror trip, you know, kind of like a bully.
Yes.
You know, if you start going in different directions, you give the bully more power.
Well, that's my feeling at any rate.
And this isn't a bully that'll really attack you in the front. He may try to attack you in the back. And I don't know if it's true or not, but it's like, it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And
my feeling was, you know, once they did that, planes were safer than anything else for the time being. And I talked to people, well, my children are afraid to let me fly. And I said, my kids wouldn't have a chutzpah to tell me not to fly because they were, I said, you have a greater chance of dying crossing the street.
Oh, yeah.
You're being hit by a car than you have of being killed by a terrorist. And I guess that's the emotional knee-jerk reaction. The thing is, what we should really do is look at our behavior and start taking control of our lives and denying the power to have us cower in the homes or to do things of this nature. You know, people pick up the abortion issue, and I said, well, you know, for me it depends on the circumstances.
Right.
You know, it's not my first choice of birth control. I mean, if you get, but there are times when I think it is highly appropriate, highly appropriate.
Well, and then again, this is where, I don't know if it, yeah, it would fall under, like, you know, messing with people's minds. They'll use a statistic, but not give it in context. Well,
yeah.
This is up, say it's abortion, whatever you want to call it, 20% since 1960. Oh, this is terrible. Well, guess what? The population has doubled. Since 1960, so technically the numbers are down.
Exactly.
And
I remember when I was growing up, women were dying from illegal abortions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the children are lost, the women are lost. So what's the problem? And then, you know, pre-planning to prevent births in the first place. We're denying pre-planning to women who die in childbirth.
Well, I always wondered how much of our conservative backlash we got going on right now is because of the, if you look at the power group coming that is currently in and expanding, it's the children of the 60s, which were, you know, peace, love, rock and roll, make love, not war.
Yeah.
And now the idea that your kids and grandkids may be doing this, you can't handle.
And they don't want their kids
to
do what they did.
Yeah, you're not going to go to the park and make love.
All right.
You know, and it's
or even try drugs.
Yeah. And you know, some people call it the ebb and flow, but it's like it's always the generation that had something. Sometimes that don't want the other generations to
experience
to experience it. Well, they want to save you from it.
Save you.
Human nature says you can't do that.
Well, no, because the minute you say no, they're going to go out and do it.
Yeah.
Some way, somehow.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, and
what we used to call it, the forbidden fruit syndrome.
Oh, yeah, well, how many, and you're old enough, how many of your friends would never tell their kids what they did?
I would say,
I've got at least half. They're like,
a good percentage, at least
then,
half would, yeah.
And then some ask me, well, what'd you tell your daughter? Whatever she asked.
Uh-huh.
Dad, did you do this? Oh, gosh, yes. You know?
Uh-huh.
You give her the whole, put it in context.
Yeah.
And then make it real. It's like, well, yeah, I got drunk one time in high school, passed out underneath a tree after I was quarterback of a football team. What did the cops do? They took me home. Now,
exactly.
In this day and age, when she was 16 and 19, when was my daughter 16? 1995. I said, now the difference is you get drunk, you do that, you're going to jail. Or at least they're locking you up.
Right.
And then you're going to throw you in treatment.
Right.
Times have changed. I mean, I just said, well, it's not right, it's not wrong, it just is.
Yes.
And she, you know, she turned out okay. But it was like, you know, one of my friends, I would never say that, you know, it's like, well, I'm.
But then you're lying to your children.
Yeah. And
that's worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're going to know you lie. Kids have a way of finding things out.
Well, and then they look at, like, with kids, one of the things kids are looking for is incongruency in a parent.
Oh, yes.
You know, and then they can call you on it. And I always think, like, one of my friends, right, is a minister.
Right.
And what he talks about is, like, you know, these people that preach, you know, they're deacons in the Baptist, or
right.
Whatever. I don't want to make fun of any religion, but they're,
yes.
They're on, and Sunday they preach, you know, love and Jesus and this
right.
And that, and then go home at dinner, rip everybody apart.
Exactly.
And you know, and even with the, or even going back to, you better never, like, you know, whatever, you know, you better never do drugs.
Intolerance.
As the person swelling down the fourth martini.
Yeah, yeah. Intolerant, judgmental.
Yeah.
Hypocritical.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. I remember going to a charismatic movement, and I never could get into it. I finally gave in to a friend who had gone to one of these movements, and so I went. And people were jumping up and saying the silliest things.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt was mass hysteria. You know, it was all, I guess, emotional charged. But and they all felt that they felt good when they left and so forth and so on. It was a great catharsis, right? But when they left, I heard them saying very critical, gossipy, sharp things about people who were not there.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, when the spirit fills you, truly, you can't say anything wrong about anybody else. You're just there so high.
Oh, yeah.
That you can't. And so to me, that told me that they didn't experience the spirit.
Yeah.
They just experienced, what, endorphins being released and having a high old time.
Well, it's just like if you point out something to someone, say someone's very conservative.
Right.
And point out, okay, name, since Grant after World, after the Civil War.
Okay, Ulysses S. Grant, right?
After him, because he's after that.
Yeah.
Name the two presidents
uh-huh.
that have served the longest on active duty in the military.
Eisenhower.
Yeah, of course Eisenhower, because he was a lifer. Who's
yeah.
next?
Eisenhower. Who was next? Who was next besides Grant? Eisenhower was a give me. Let's see, who else served? Jack Kennedy served.
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter. Really?
He went to Annapolis, so all that time served.
Okay,
then did,
okay.
Then he did his 6 years active duty in his reserve time.
Okay.
So there's a little, you know, it's like fascinating fact.
Right.
You know, that like, fascinating. You know, name the president that, you know, you name presidents besides, you know, Clinton that really served no time. You know?
Exactly.
And
or like the current one.
Right.
Yes.
Or like, you know, name the president.
Uh-huh.
You know, in this century, that would probably be the most religious man to sit in the White House.
Carter would be up there.
Carter is it. He mm-hmm. taught Baptist Sunday school when he was at Annapolis.
Really?
To the, like, the children of the, like, the guys teaching at Annapolis and this
mm-hmm.
and that. Even in the White House, he taught Sunday school.
Really? That was not well known.
Right. And guess who was probably the second? Or who misses church, you know, who goes to church the most. Let's just put it that way. Consistently, not just, you know, not just for photo ops.
Well, so we can rule out Kennedy, right?
Right.
Truman was good. Who else?
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
really?
He's always been a member of a church, and he always goes.
Ah.
Before he got into politics, while he was in politics, and this and that.
Because I was going to say Woodrow Wilson was
yeah.
also.
And if you name the two presidents that went to church the least, it's Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. The ones that the religious right liked the most.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not making a judgment call. I basically dislike all politics. Anymore, but I'll work for whoever pays me.
That's his money is as green as the next passes, right?
Yeah. Will you help sway an election? Will the check clear?
So some of the other things, there's some other things that people can use in their everyday life to help them through. How about if they're dealing with a boss who's really, you know, lost control? I think one of the things I found early on was. The more out of control somebody was with me, if I lowered my voice, you know, deliberately lowered the tone, slowed down my speech and spoke softer, they'd start coming down out of their anger themselves.
Right.
And, you know, because they'd have to hear me, and they couldn't hear me if they were screaming.
Well,
that's a kind. Is that kind of what you were talking
yeah,
about, too?
Yeah, and it's like if you have someone that just gets to you, you know, like at work, like a boss or a coworker, if you do the old where you close your eyes,
uh-huh.
and picture them, like with circus music in the background,
uh-huh.
and put like a bozo nose on them, you know, or like a Ronald McDonald orange hair wig.
Mm-hmm.
If they got red hair, that won't work. But, you know, something kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And picture them that way yelling at you.
Mm-hmm.
Or being weird, whatever, mm-hmm. how weird they are. It loses some of its power.
Yes.
You know, it's real tough to be chewed out by a clown.
Well, yes.
And take it serious.
Exactly.
You know, and if you picture them that way in your head, you know, and that's where, like, you know, and where that, where I think of it is, you ever been around, like, there's five people, right?
Right.
And three people are, oh, my God, the boss is this, and they're crying,
mm-hmm.
and they're upset. And one of them is like, and I don't know about that one. The other one goes, you're a clown.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't let it get to them.
Right.
And in their head, somewhere, they're probably picturing Bozo, big nose, big red shoes.
Clarabelle.
You know, and they'll just, like, listen or what, let it roll off their back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rather than... And again, if you are talking empowerment, if you remove the power from the tormentor.
Exactly, the bully.
Yeah, and sometimes it'll, not always, I don't want to act like that simple, start to defuse the situation.
Exactly.
Another thing you can do is, say you have a little, a bad habit like biting your nails.
Right, okay.
Right? So, one of the ways your brain operates, if you, like, picture your fingernail,
mm-hmm.
and the easiest way to do it is actually look at your fingernail,
mm-hmm.
and then close your eyes so you get your picture of the finger. If you're driving, don't do this. but, like, so you see the fingernail. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a problem. And that's called, for some people, that's a trigger. They see their fingernail, they're automatically going to bite it.
Right.
Start chewing on it, right? It'll work for cigarettes somewhat, too, or candy or any. It's
mm-hmm.
a visual trigger. You see it, you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then what you do is, put that aside for a moment, and then get a picture of you. Like
mm-hmm.
at your ideal self. I mean the you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Acting the way you want to act. Being
mm-hmm.
that you that, whoa, that's me at my very best. Cover of a book, you know, speaking to a group of people, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do it a check to make sure that, like, that you would never bite their fingernails or that you would never eat, you know.
Overeat or
overeat chocolate or smoke a cigarette. And then what you do is the next, so then you picture your, like, let's say fingernail, and you see it, you close your eyes, you picture the fingernail, and then you have it like on a computer screen where you double click,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden you go click, click, that picture just disappears, and then you see you make that picture of you at your very best, like, huge in your mind.
Right.
Ooh, and then you open your eyes, close your eyes, and you do that four or five times, and what that begins to do is it takes the trigger that used to get you to want to bite your nails,
mm-hmm.
and now subconsciously it's pulling you toward your ideal self.
Exactly. Oh, great.
That would never do that behavior.
Right.
And that is like a, you know, 1 minute intervention you can do with somebody that surprisingly gets people to do things like stop biting their nails,
mm-hmm.
you know, eat a lot less chocolate or sweets. Because
beautiful.
As long as those two pictures are incompatible in your brain, because
mm-hmm.
at the subconscious level, you have to make instantaneous decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I tell somebody, oh, no, you have to think about it. I go, you're driving at 55 mile an hour coming up on a light, and it turns red. You don't have to constantly, well, does that mean I should slow down?
Mm-hmm. You're going to do
it. Take my foot off the, no, you just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain makes instantaneous, that's what it does best. And one of the things you've been to learn some of the ways your brain operates, you're actually freeing it up to do what it does best.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not an effort to make a change. It just seems like, wow. You know,
mm-hmm.
and when I think I'm doing my best work or it's the most elegant when I work with people,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like they don't remember they had the problem.
Exactly.
And it's like, well, yeah, I remember talking to you, but we didn't do that. We moved pictures around and you kind of had me relax and, you know, this and that and the other thing and, you know, took a bunch of my money.
That
like,
they
yeah,
remember.
You're well, you know, you're not biting your nails. Get out, you know. And, but so, you know, that's the power of it.
Yes. That's beautiful. So a lot of this, what you're saying, too, is then we are really bombarded, are we not,
mm-hmm.
on a daily basis?
Yeah.
With
when you begin to learn about this, one of the things that, like, I won't fall asleep with the TV on.
You won't?
No. And it's not that I watch a lot of sci-fi, right?
Oh, okay.
And you've heard me talk in my background and...
Yeah.
And I write gratuitous violent thrillers now and stuff like that. And it's not the TV shows. I mean, I wouldn't mind falling asleep watching Star Wars, even though, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the commercials. I don't want those commercials going into my head. Because
ah.
commercials, like, you're not driving the right car, your teeth aren't white enough, you know, you have the shame of ring around the collar, whatever you got going on, your breath is, you got bad breath.
Yeah.
You know, it's negative, negative, negative.
Well, do you know, now I stop and think about it, you're right.
Yeah. So
many of the commercials are, this is bad, do this, and it's good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like I tell people, they go, oh, so you never like fall asleep listening to music? No, music don't bother me. Yeah, I don't care. You know, heavy metal, rap, I don't, you know, any of that. It's a different, well, I don't know about rap, but it's the message I don't want going into my head.
Right.
Because your subconscious mind, I think you fall asleep watching a movie, it understands. It
mm-hmm.
really does. You know, your subconscious mind, you've been through hypnosis training, you understand?
Right,
it thinks literally, and it thinks like a child.
Yes.
About a 7 to 9 year old child.
Uh-huh.
And children know that Star Wars is a movie.
Absolutely.
Right? But when you watch a commercial, that's real. I mean, those, you know.
They can redefine that, even if they're cartoon characters on it.
Yeah, yeah. So there's certain things, you know, that you become much more aware of.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's like... And the power of it, like, a commercial from years ago, right? If I start it, I'll bet you'll finish it. Plop, plop.
Fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
You haven't heard that in many, many years.
Yet, I remember it.
Right?
You know the other one was Bucky Beaver, Brusha, Brusha, Brusha.
Yeah.
You
deserve.
Pardon?
You deserve.
The best?
A break today.
Oh, you deserve a break today. Okay.
Yeah. Seeing these things. And what they do, they get them in your subconscious mind by repetition.
Exactly.
You know, there hasn't been cigarette commercials on since the 70s, 60s,
really?
70s. But, you know, if you're old enough, probably over like, I don't know, 40, 45,
yeah.
you know, I'd walk a mile.
For a Camel cigarette?
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know, and I remember that from nursery school.
I'd rather fight
Philip Morris.
Which?
Philip
yeah.
Morris?
Pardon?
And Philip Morris cigarettes?
Yeah.
What was Philip Morris?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember the call.
Yeah, so that's... It,
boy, is that good programming.
So it get, you know, commercials get in your head
mm-hmm.
by repetition. And, you know, that's why they go out of their way to write those jingles.
Exactly.
And, you know, because you're not really listening to them, which is, to me, then you're switching. See, when you say, I'm not really paying attention, you've shut off the critical factor of your mind.
And you've opened it up to the...
And your subconscious goes, okay, you deserve a break today. Or you want to go to McDonald's.
Yes.
You know? And again, here's like people that smoke, they can't quit. One of the reasons they can't quit is somewhere in their head, they have the idea that smoking is still pleasurable.
Yes,
It does not matter that intellectually they know that it's killing them.
Yes.
Right. That's why you'll see people smoking with oxygen through a trach.
I never understood.
They walk out of a hospital and somebody's dying of cancer. They light a cigarette. Well, in their head, they still think there's pleasure because probably growing up, statistically, they had someone close to them smoke, mother,
right,
father.
Right. Right.
And if you're
right.
our age, back in when we were little kids, 70% of the adult population smoked.
Wow.
A lot of people smoked.
Well, you know what's funny? My family didn't.
Yeah, but even then. Those that did, it was they might have even told their kids don't smoke, but it was the subconscious messages where, oh, I can't relax without a cigarette. I
exactly.
can't have a cigarette to wake up. You know, a meal's not complete till you have a cigarette.
Or so the cigarette after sex or something.
Yeah. So you develop the idea that like smoking is pleasurable.
Or sexy.
Yeah, sexy. And then, of course, they fed it with the guy with the sleeves, you know, the roll it up in your T-shirt and... And started smoking it. Most people that started smoking between the ages of 12 and 16, with the average age being 14.
Right.
Where you really want to fit in.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're, and even if it's, so if it's with the smokers, at least it's a group.
Yes. Yes.
And so, you know, so then you locked in the idea that smoking is pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so hard to quit. Your brain's just looking for pleasure. Doesn't matter that it's killing you.
Well, also, it's addictive. There's a chemical added.
Oh, yeah. There's that, but, yeah, and you add to it that idea. Just like in our culture, we're taught several things about food that make us eat too much. Like, you know, we're growing up, and the message intended is fine. Clean your plate. Well, the message intended is don't be wasteful.
Exactly.
But the message you learn is eat too much, can't say no, feel guilty about food.
Oh, you know, my dad was good with that. He grew up he's had his early life in Italy.
Yeah.
And they starved.
Right.
I mean, the message he was... Well, folks, this has been a wonderful evening listening to Dr. Will Horton. Dr. Horton, please give your information where people can contact you.
Well, the easiest way is at the website, www.nfnlp.com. That's fnlp.com. I have a couple of books, a bunch of tapes and products, and the new book will be out probably in a few weeks, a couple of months. In fact, you got to write me something for it, a little back cover matter.
Oh, I'd love to.
And that's it. www.nfnlp.com is the easiest way, because then you can get information.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so glad you were able to come and visit this evening.
All righty.
This is Phyllis Pricer, your hostess for the Higher Dimension. You can reach me at the email cpr433-9313@aol.com or my business office, 202-387-2080. I do hypnosis and healings, and I am a psychic. We look forward to having you next week when we're going to have Dr. Henry Reed, who is affiliated with the Association of Research and Enlightenment and with the Atlantic University on as our guest. He's going to talk about the heart connection. So thank you all so much for listening to VBS Radio. God bless and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.